Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:41 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 27th. The VIX index was up 11 in here today. That's a big move. And it's also the highest closing value we've seen since 2011. That's, I think, an important factor. The corrective phase that began about a week ago is at least similar to what we saw back in 2010 and 2011. Now, there is the possibility that we could get a spike higher to about 50, and that would still be within the range of a medium-term correction in the stock market. So we're at an interesting juncture here, because when the VIX tends to pop on the upside, it tends to go in a very dynamic manner. But we also have plenty of evidence that it can come right back down again in a very abrupt manner as well. I think just keeping that in mind is important when we look at the S&P 500. Now, it was down aggressively again in here today. There was initial speculation, I think, in the market that we may get a positive day, but those hopes were dashed around the middle of the session, and it then accelerated down to the low at the end of the day. Now, it's worth remembering that one of the reasons why the stock market had been doing well is because ETF rebalancing occurs in the last half an hour of trading. And when the market was doing well until approximately 10 days ago, it was because of a bid coming into the market at the end of the day from ETF buying. And that was lifting the market. But that is not what's happening today. This sort of selling, particularly in the last half hour of trading, is very suggestive of program trading, on particularly coming through from ETFs. So this is important, because this kind of volatility is something that has been predicted by a number of people over the course of the last 5 or 6 years. The concentration of flow in passive investments exacerbates the volatility of moves during corrective phases, because they all go to the exit at the same time. So that does have a deleterious effect. Now, what that suggests is we are definitely in a corrective phase, but we're right in the region of the psychological 3000 level. It's the upper side of the underlying trading range. So what's now the big question is, what happens next? We have got a short-term oversold condition, which has now erased the short-term overbought condition. If this is going to remain a consistent trend, then we need to see a bounce soon. Now, I did write quite a bit yesterday about the importance of consistency and of the 1,000-day moving average representing an area of important support for secular bull markets. That was true in the run-up during the recession, the depression in the 1930s. It was important in the run-up from 1980 to 2000, and it's been important since 2011. So we have a lot of historical support for the view that in a secular bull market, the stock market generally finds support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. But the other big consistency characteristics of this trend have been the sequences of ranges one above another, the length of time that the ranges have persisted for, and the absence of failed upside breaks. Well, we don't yet have a failed upside break, but the stock market, or the S&P 500, did trade back below the 200-day moving average in here today, and it's going to have to bounce if we're going to see a clear evidence of some support coming in. And so far, we don't have a lot of evidence to support that view. Now, when we look at some of the other stock market indices, particularly those that had been lagging, Well, the Russell 2000, for example, now does have a failed upside break. It popped above the 1600 point level and has come straight back down again. And we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend in 2018. It subsequently did not recover from that. It did not get up to a new high. So we now have a lower major rally high in terms of the Russell 2000. And now the question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move back above that 1600 point level, or whether we're going to get further distribution. The transportation index is obviously quite influenced by the outlook for economic activity, and it pulled back rather sharply again in here today. So now it is at a new reaction low. It is quite likely to go back and test the lower side of this range around the 9,000 level. But again, we're going to have to see clear upper dynamics in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. It is certainly now for the bulls to prove that we are still in a bull market environment. I think when we look at the high yield sector, it's one of the better lead indicators for strife in the stock market. And spreads are certainly widening in here right now. The high yield ETF pulled back again sharply in here today. So it has quite clearly broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. And I think it is likely that we're going to see some additional easing in here. But what I think is particularly relevant is the pop on the upside that we have for high yield energy. And this has been a gathering problem. The uptrend we've seen over the course of the last probably 16 months in terms of the risk that's being attached to the high yield energy sector, this is greatly increasing the potential that we're going to have bankruptcies in the unconventional sector. The low price of oil, from their perspective, where West Texas Intermediate was down, at the close, again, it pulled back really quite sharply towards the end of the day. But the bigger picture here is that it is coming back down towards the lows around $40. And $40 has been an area of support for West Texas Intermediate since 2016. But it's well below the break-even point for a really quite considerable proportion of unconventional supply in North America. And a number of those companies have already been in rather difficult environments with regard to the leverage that they've taken on and their inability to sell at a profit. Production in the USA has peaked, because with prices this low, there is no incentive to continue drilling. When we look at the futures curve, it has moved from being in a backwardation to being in a sharp contango. But even the longer dated contracts are still only around $50, and that just is not enough to afford the opportunity to hedge production at a profitable level. So I think it is quite likely that we are It's unlikely that the oil price is going to bottom until we see bankruptcies coming through in the high yield energy sector. And of course, that is a contributing factor in the expansion of yields, of yield spreads in the high yield sector generally. Now, when we look at the broader environment, there is obviously a lot of uncertainty. And then certainly it is the travel and leisure sector have taken the brunt of selling pressure. Carnival Cruises has been trending lower for over 2 years, and now it is accelerating lower. It's back at the lows put in 2010 and 11. So it's certainly priced in a lot of bad news. And when we think about what the valuations are like, well, it's trading below the value of its ships, and it's got a price to sales ratio of 1.1. I believe that Royal Caribbean's price to sales ratio is 1. So we know that a lot of bad news has been priced in, but we're going to have to see. We haven't even seen yet the impact that the coronavirus is going to have on consumer expectations. And I think that's one of the big unknowns. There was the story circulating today about the South Korean Airways stewardess that was infected with the coronavirus and flew to Tel Aviv, serving customers along the way, and then got back on another plane and from South Korea to Los Angeles and serving passengers all along the way. So there is the real potential that she has single-handedly contributed to the spread of the coronavirus in a number of countries, and that's just one person. Well, obviously, there is the potential here that we're going to see the number of cases in the USA starting to trend higher in a more meaningful fashion. And I think that that has to be the base case. Now, when we go back and look at the Spanish flu, and I think the most logical comparison is with the Spanish flu, except for the big difference that on this occasion, rather than it being young people being mostly affected by the flu, it is older people, then the parallels are pretty similar. And it peaked in the spring of 2018. It came back in the autumn of 2018 and the winter of 2019. So, 1918 and 1919. So just about 100 years ago. Well, that does hold out the prospect that we could see a lull in the summer and then it could reanimate in the winter. That's obviously a potential issue. Now, when we think about what can we anticipate, I think one of the most important points is that job openings have been pulling back. And that's an important, I think, measure of enthusiasm among the corporate sector. We've had a substantial pullback. And one of the reasons why the number of job openings might be contracting is for the simple reason that companies aren't hiring. But from an unemployment perspective, companies stop hiring before they start firing. And when we then think about the jobless numbers, well, we definitely get this data quite regularly. It's every week, and it does tend to be volatile. So let's simply look at the moving average, the four-week moving average, to smooth out the data. It was last updated about a week ago. We're going to get another update reasonably soon. But the big question I think a number of investors are going to have is, if this starts to break higher, then are we on the front end of a recession? That's where the big question is, because consumer sentiment is one of the US consumer, and the demand from the US consumer has been one of the most significant tailwinds for the global economy and particularly the stock market. The fear about the coronavirus has the potential to impact consumer decisions, but if it contributes to rising unemployment, then that is going to have a much more pronounced impact on consumer decisions because people won't have any money. That's something that we need to pay particular attention to. And of course, it greatly increases the importance of a substantial intervention by central bankers. So 10-year Treasury yields are down to 1.25%, and this has been a meaningful breakdown to new reaction lows. What I find particularly interesting is we had a really quite pronounced short-term overbought condition in the third quarter of 2019 when it got to 1.5%. It completely unwound the overextension relative to the trend mean, and now it is breaking lower. There is the clear potential that we're going to see additional upside for the bond prices here. And bond prices are coming back up towards the peaks put in 2012 and 2016. Of course, the coupon level is different, so that has affected the yield calculations, but this is looking better supported here and a clear evidence of resistance around 1.135 would be required to question that we're not still in a demand-dominated environment. The dollar index has got all the way up towards 100, but it has been pulling back in a meaningful fashion. Not so much because of particular weakness in the dollar, but rather that carry trades in the euro are being unwound. And the euro was up in a meaningful manner in here today. Then when we look at the Japanese yen, it has also rallied really quite impressively in here today. So this is also safe haven buying, but it is additionally the unwinding of carry trades. I think that is one of the most significant factors. When we think about the gold price, it is consolidating right now, but the most likely scenario is that all it is consolidation, because there is the clear potential that what we've seen so far in Hong Kong, which is the resort to helicopter money, is potentially now going to be deployed in an increasingly large number of countries, subject to the economic deterioration being similar. That's why the stock market has weak. So we're at a very important juncture. This, on the one hand, we have the potential that interest rates are not going to be rising anytime soon. So that's a potential positive. We have the potential that there is going to be a significant effort by central banks and governments to support their respective economies, and that does support the view that there will be significant additional stimulus and potentially even helicopter money. Now, if we get helicopter money in more than one country, then that is going to very clearly play into the modern monetary theory camp, that people were worried about the evolution of modern monetary theory about 6 months ago. What we have in fact today is the reality of helicopter money in Hong Kong. Now obviously Hong Kong has had the contraction as a result of the street protests, the additional contraction because of the hiatus in economic activity resulting from the coronavirus. So they have more extreme need for extraordinary measures. But it's a clear example of the potential for very extraordinary measures to be deployed in an effort to placate a restive population. And if people start losing their jobs, if economic activity grinds to a halt as a result of fear about the coronavirus, then the potential for those kinds of extraordinary measures to be deployed rises, I think, quite impressively. And there is the very clear potential that gold is going to be a significant beneficiary of that, because you don't get those kinds of devaluation of fiat currencies without there being a clear deflationary issue. And obviously gold benefits as an asset that should do well in negative yielding environments. Now, the quantity of high yield debt is pushing higher here. Then when we think about what is happening in terms of the futures markets, well, we can see, for example, that the DAX index is down about 300 points on the futures market. But the bigger picture here is that it has now got up to test the 14,000 level and pulled back in an aggressive manner to test the sequence of higher reaction lows. I think the most important thing to realize here is this is not an especially consistent trend. It's a pretty similar story for the FTSE 250. It's not an especially consistent trend, and when we have had these very big pullbacks in the past, they have contributed to medium-term corrections. And I do think that when we start to look at the price action, and if we were to take the labels off the charts and simply look at the price action, we have got these very dynamic downward moves that is going to have had a deleterious effect on sentiment. There is obviously, in any bull market, a clear temptation to buy the dip. And buying the dip works in a massive bull market. And the company that has benefited most from buying the dip is Amazon. The share has gone from double digits to quadruple digits over the course of the last decade. Now, it popped on the upside 4 weeks ago, and it has now failed to sustain that breakout. It is coming back down to test the region of the trend mean, but the risk here is that it goes right back down and tests the lower side of the range, which is around 1500. And I think the most important point is, if we simply look at Amazon's pattern on a log scale chart so that we can see the ranges, we don't have any evidence of ranges not being sustained. And that was particularly true from about 2015 onwards. So this is the big question, is if this is a failed upside break, then the big question now is whether it is going to go right back down and test the lower side of the range, and then will it be able to hold? Amazon is obviously dominant in e-commerce, and if people are not going out and spending in shops, well, there is a logical argument that they will continue to spend online. So that should be beneficial for the share, if we're thinking about it in logical fashion. But of course, a lot of the people investing are not thinking about Apple in particular, but rather they're buying ETFs. And with the fear trade, they're just selling the ETF. And Amazon it benefited from being a big component of some of those ETFs, so it is selling off in line with the ETF. Logically, if there is going to be less social activity, then it is likely that the online companies should do better. Alibaba, for example, has continued to hold the region of the $200 level, precisely because its delivery drivers are still working, even as the economic hiatus in other parts of the economy has had a negative effect. So the big pullback, for example, that we saw on Apple in here today, this certainly looks like a reversion back down towards the mean. I've highlighted in the past that these kinds of extraordinary pullbacks are quite normal in Apple, and that generally speaking, it has held and found support in the region of the previous peak, which is not all that far away now from the region of the 200-day moving average. What I think is quite clear here is that anything that is very overextended on the upside is likely to now pull back at least towards the mean. So there is a bit of an oil change element to this. And Tesla, for example, falling $100 in here today, this is clearly suggesting that there is the scope for a lot of the previous advance to be completely unwound. When we look at, for example, Virgin Galactic, then I think equally there is ample scope for a lot of the previous advance to be unwound. Shopify is a share that has got an estimated PE of 1600. There is obviously a lot of good news priced into that share as well. When we then, however, look at some of the energy sector, I think this is a time to pay attention because they're accelerating lower. And obviously, that is in response to economic trouble. It's obviously in response to the low oil and gas prices. It's obviously then going to put a question mark on the sustainability of their dividends. But ExxonMobil now yields 7%. It was trading at $100 in 2014. It's trading at 50 today. And it is, I think, now back at lows not seen since 2004. So it is pricing out the entire energy bull market. And these kinds of accelerations do not last indefinitely. So we're definitely getting some mispricing coming in, but we don't have evidence yet that it is over. And certainly, when we see that there are very overextended trends, then that's generally the best time to be selling. I think as this market makes a decision over the course of the next week, whether we are going to see support coming through in the region of 200-day moving averages, and what are central banks going to deliver upon, then that is going to have the clearest effect or the clearest signal of what is going to happen next and how likely it is that we are going to have a recession as a result of the fears about the coronavirus. And I think with that, I will leave you for today. And wish all the best to all of you.